Greetings in Jesus' name and a welcome to a new fresh morning. Before we look at our next golden rule, let's look at a golden verse of the Bible, 1 Peter 3. If you'd open your Bibles to that, I'd like to begin with another verse. Are you going to become a golden teacher this year? First Peter 3, I'd like to read verses 1 to 4, and I hope I don't misuse this by substituting wives with teacher, so I'd like to do that a little bit, maybe skip a few phrases since it is focused on wives and them relating to husbands, but I believe the truth here is for the men as well. Likewise, ye teachers, be in subjection. Be in subjection to the mallet. Just for a little quick review from yesterday morning. Verse 2, while your students this coming term behold your chaste conversation coupled with fear, dear teachers, let your adorning not be that outward adorning of plaiting the hair and of wearing of gold, but find the gold in your heart. Verse 4, but let that gold be the hidden man of the heart, in that which is not corruptible, that which will not tarnish. That's one of the hallmarks of gold, its durability. Even the ornament of a meek and restful spirit. I don't know if you teachers have ever experienced the first day of school. Some of you are still looking forward to that. And my comments here next are to try to welcome you to this wonderful experience of about a half an hour, an hour, however long you have planned to be at school without the students yet in your room, just waiting. And Brother Kent had an excellent inspiration, but I was sitting back here contemplating restfulness, thinking about being at rest, and I was battling it. Just, what am I going to say this morning whenever I take the floor and speak to this group of teachers? How do you get restfulness? A hidden man in the heart. Inside, at rest, between you and God. Not just a put-on, on the outward. No reflection if there are stewardesses in here. But on one of my flights coming out here, I just was observing. And I give this story because I have done this. So if that stewardess happens to be here in the audience this morning, totally forgiven. But she was handing out drinks, and it sort of worked like this. Would you like a drink? Would you like a drink? Would you like a drink? And I thought about that, how I can pull in this smile and then the hidden man of the heart. What is that? And it goes on and finishes in verse 4 and it says, which is in the sight of God of great price, and somehow I get that it exceeds the gold that we mine out of the earth. It's more precious than gold. What is this hidden man of the heart? What is this quiet and meek spirit? Number 780 in Hymns of the Church, verse 1, is one answer I would give here at the beginning. Oh, 'tis a lovely thing to see a man, a woman of prudent heart, whose thoughts and lips, and one more, and life agree. All in subjection to God's pruning. Well, let's turn from malleability to a little simpler word. We all understand this word, restful. Did you have a good night of rest last night? Did you? Folks did. Or did you toss and turn, and that pillow never had a right side? And the springs just jabbed wrong. Well, what is the cause of our unrest? But can you still sleep? Let's turn in our Bibles now to Isaiah 32 to introduce this golden rule. We're going to call it the restful rule. So we had the malleable rule. Now let's turn to the restful rule in our minds. Will there be restful teachers in your school? Isaiah 32, verse 17. And the work of righteousness shall be peace. Now just pause there on that thought for a moment. The work of right living, of choosing to follow Christ no matter what. Everybody say the last three words together with firmness. Shall be peace. See, what we're saying is that we often, as humans, try to define what's going to bring me peace. For example, as I was sitting back here, I was trying to work in my mind, how can I get just a little bit more restful before I come up here? Okay? Should I exhale? Well, exhaling is a good thing to do. And should I inhale? That's all good. But the work of righteousness, let's say it again, shall be peace. There comes a choice in the hidden man of the heart, a meek and quiet spirit, to bring that peace into my life. But we're not finished reading here. And the effect of righteousness, quietness and assurance. And now let's all say the last word, forever. Do you believe that? That's a powerful word. You mean through this next year, just a constant the whole way through, that if I choose righteousness and right living, that there's going to be peace in this classroom. I don't know if some of you know your students that you're going to have next year or not. Is that a good thing to know for teachers or not? I mean, should you go talk to the last teacher and find out some things, or should you just let that not? Probably all of you know some things. Some of you are going to get some of the same students back. I'm getting a student back this coming term that I'm very eager and looking forward to, but at the same time, I know it's. But can there be peace forever through this next term? It says there can be. Verse 18, and my people, dear teachers, take it, shall dwell in a peaceable habitation and in sure dwellings and in quiet resting places. When it shall hail, there's going to be a quiet resting place. And when that hail is coming down on the forest, when the hail is coming down on my classroom, there can be peace. There's going to be a resting place. You want it? I do. But the verse that I'm reading right now in verse 19 didn't say there's going to be peace and rest. What's your classroom like right now? Wherever it be, Mississippi, Oklahoma, or Oregon, or Pennsylvania. Have you ever stepped into a classroom in the summer? Every now and then I do it just for the... Is that a restful classroom? Would you choose it? Is that what you want? Step in, it's got this old stale smell of stuffiness. Is that peace? Is that rest? It's not the one, and that's another classroom I want. Do you want hail coming down? Do you want hail coming down on the forest in the city? Sometimes our classrooms are a low place. If you've taught for a while, there's some days where you come into your classroom. Maybe the hail came down yesterday and now it's just a low place. I think God brings us low sometimes so that we learn what true resting places are. 20, dear teachers, blessed are ye that sow on the mountains, down in the valleys. Whether the hail be coming down, you just keep sowing. Sometimes I think the choicest word for us as teachers is resilience. You just keep coming back the next day. You keep coming back the next day. You just keep sowing. Because in that, there is rest. Even to send forth thither the feet of the ox and the ass. I don't know if any of you have oxes and asses to lead forth this coming, but you're going to keep sowing anyway. God's way is the right way, and the right way brings rest, always. What kind of rest? Have you ever been in a classroom that was not restful? What makes one classroom a haven of rest and another one a havoc of mess? Y'all done some visiting in classrooms, in other classrooms? I did one year. I was visiting a local school and went into a high school chemistry class and sat down. And the teacher was trying to teach the conversion between the Celsius and Kelvin scale. And the students, and these are upper grade students that should have known better, were just vying with that teacher, just tugging and pulling on her authority, just about the whole way through the class. I was sitting as a visitor, and I don't know if you've ever done this or not, but you wanted to just rise up and do something about that. That tension was, well, it was nearing zero on the Kelvin scale. They were talking to each other. They were signaling across. They were balking. They were sometimes giving answers, but they were giving it in a tone that was challenging. And I was sitting there wanting to say, this must not be. I don't allow this to happen. Do you know what, teachers? It has happened in my room. If you've taught for a while, to some degree or other, unrest can come into our rooms. And how, in those times, can I restore rest? I have a comment to make here at the outstart. Rest is not so much in regiment as it is in resolution and redemption. Here's a thought that I want to work on just for a little bit right here. I was just discussing with another school where they were having problems and things were getting tense and difficult and there was interrelation. And I said, you know, sometimes as a teacher I want to say, This should just never happen in a Christian school. But I want to lay out here, we are working with the human nature of children. The devil hates our schools. So he's going to be wrestling and tussling. And how can we be teachers of rest and redemption? That's what our children need. Hasten to say, there is much preventive maintenance that will assure rest. And it is usually how we as teachers respond to the rough and the raw and the ragged that determines whether that rest comes. One day there was a fifth grade boy, and he was finishing up his job of cleaning with a rag in the room. And he was returning that rag to the center closet out in the hall. And when he was 10 feet away from the closet door, he balled up the rag and he threw the rag at the door, just hit the center of the door, and then the rag dropped down to the floor. Now, I would like to understand as a teacher, what was the purpose? Was there anger that morning in that fifth grade boy? Was he practicing target practice? Inhibition release exercise? I mean, explain that one. Ball up a rag and throw it at a door. The teacher was shocked, but not shook. She simply told that boy to wash off the spot of impact, which I don't even know if there was anything on the door. That was me. I did it. Slightly humiliated. Sorry about the story. But thanks to that teacher who took the restless lad and did neither more nor less than what he needed. I asked some students, what brings rest into a classroom as I was working on this topic? I said, okay, I as a teacher know what feels restful, but what about you as students? And a girl said, only the way girls can say things, if the boys behave. I Okay, boys, shape up. And another one said, if you're patient. But the most often answer that I heard from the students was, trust. Trust is such a gift. Let's see if we can stir up our minds for trust, because I think that trust will create rest. I would like to use a story this morning, and we're going to build a classroom together. So that's how, and do we all have handouts? Is there anyone that doesn't have a handout? There's one back here. Let's open our Bibles to John 13 and have a story here in the background. I would like to just read this story. John 13. I would like to read verses 1 through 17. John 13, verse 1. Now before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour was come, some of you instructors know when your hour is to be today. It's your turn. You're to stand up and speak. But think about, teachers, what Jesus' hour was. Let that sink in. His hour was come that he should depart out of this world unto the Father. Having loved his own which were in the world, he loved them unto the end. And supper being ended, the devil having now put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him. Couldn't the next hour have begun some other way than a close disciple be a betrayer of you? Couldn't God have chosen another way to... Couldn't we have eased that up a bit? Verse 3, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hand, and he was come from God and went to God, he still taught. He riseth from supper and laid aside his garments and took a towel and girded himself. After that, he poureth water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel wherewith he was girded. There are times in my teaching where I want to say, I am not adequate. And as humans, I guess we come to that point sometimes where we aren't. But I don't know that I can stand up and speak or do or share or communicate to this student down the hall that I've sent down there to have a little conference with. But verse 5 is a verse of action. And I think sometimes as we just get to work, we find rest. As we start walking, we find rest. Verse 6, then cometh he to Simon Peter. Any of you have any Peters in your classroom? And Peter saith unto him, Lord, dost thou wash my feet? Jesus answered and said unto him, what I do thou knowest not now, but thou shalt know hereafter. Peter saith unto him, thou shalt never wash my feet. Jesus answered him, if I wash thee not, thou hast no part with me. Simon Peter saith unto him, Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head. Jesus saith unto him, notice the rest. You just, you know, our graph is sort of, we hope it's working up, but God's will it is. But Jesus, the line is so smooth and clear. He that is washed needeth not save to wash his feet, but is clean every whit. And ye are clean, but not all, for he knew who should betray him. Therefore said he, ye are not all clean. So after he had washed their feet, and had taken his garments, and was set down again, he saith unto them, know ye what I have done to you? Ye call me Master and Lord, and ye say well, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and Master, have washed your feet, ye also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example of rest, that ye should do as I have done to you and bring rest to your classroom. Verily, verily, I say unto you, the servant is not greater than his Lord, neither he that is sent greater than he that sent him. If ye know these things, ye shall have a happy and restful classroom this coming school term. Forever? Ideal circumstances in this story? Hardly. Hanging death threat, proud bickering, and if you follow the story just ahead of this, the disciples were fighting among each other who's going to be the greatest, just as they were coming to this time where Jesus was going to stoop to the lowest. They're talking about who's going to be the greatest. Boisterous Peter, reckless Judas, but there is peace in this classroom. Why? Because Jesus is there. Could it be said of your classroom this coming year, whenever the parents and the school board are talking and the students are sometimes a bit restless, but there's a school board member that says to another one, but our teacher is at rest. Our teacher is at rest. He or she is submitting. He or she is learning from the master teacher who brings rest. Read the definitions there of rest. Look at the synonyms here as we go along. Are you a restful person? How can we find rest? I would like to build a classroom here and look at some practical things this morning that can help us to come to rest. I have 10 words that I'd like to place onto this drawing, and I would like to use the drawing to speak to us a bit here as we go, because we do want a restful classroom. As we do, though, this, keep in mind that there is something missing in this classroom, in this drawing, and at the end, I'd like to find that missing thing. Now, as we do this, you keep thinking about that, okay? It's a very important ingredient of a classroom. You search, okay? What word would you put down on the floor of a classroom? So you look at those 10 words there, and I'll take a participation here. And don't be shy. You remember from yesterday, we need to speak up and participate. Right here. You did it. Very good. I have shared this topic before, and some people choose authority. And I do not scorn the choice of the word authority, but I'm going to save that word for later. And there's a particular reason why I'm going to save that for later. I would like to choose principle as the foundation of our classrooms. What principles should be the floor joists of your classroom? Watch that you do not put application of principles as the floor you stand on, such as rules. We're going to get rules here later. Keep principle as the foundation that you build your life, your classroom on. I had 2 8th grade girls. Sorry, sisters, again here for some of my illustrations. And all I was doing was teaching from day to day. I mean, that's what I was supposed to be doing. And they were sitting at a table listening. Now, these were 2 8th grade girls that were reasonably sharp. The one had some struggles in school. I enjoyed them. They were good students. We had a good relationship between each other. But there was one thing that these two girls would do, and I don't know when they got started doing it. I don't know whether they had a little confab one day whenever they had a sleep out or something like that. I don't know how this even started. I don't know which one started it, but it was just this simple. Now, you ready? They would sit at the table, and while I'm lecturing and teaching and writing on the chalkboard, I started noticing that they stuck their two elbows next to each other, okay, right here. And then about every 5 minutes, they would press in against. And then there was a release. And then after a while, they would press. And again, I can almost imagine some of you doing this. I'm sorry for telling. And then there was a release. I don't know. Told you the rag story on myself. Now, I can't get quite the logic there of that. Now, I know about bumping my wife and my wife bumping me sometimes about. But this was like in the middle of a history class. And so I'm not quite sure. Impressing the point. Did you get that? I don't know. Now, the problem to me as a teacher is every time the press would happen and the release would happen, I would somewhat lose my thought. And I am sure they were. I don't know that they were with me so very well. And it was bothering me, day after day, this little simple thing. And now here's what I'm telling this story about is, what was I as a teacher supposed to do with this rather unrestful situation in my mind? And they might have been finding rest in it, but I wasn't. Well, At that time, we don't go scrambling for a rule. Oh, no, I as a teacher on the first day should have said, cause not the triceps or the biceps to tense in any way against thy neighbor. I need to come back to a principle in my teaching that there needs to be respectful attention in the classroom and paying attention. That's the principle. Build your rules on principles. Now let's go to a deeper principle than that. I want a principle within of watchful, godly fear. That's what's going to lead into a restful classroom. Back to our beginning verses from Isaiah. The way of righteousness is going to bring peace. I must build righteousness into the floor. Now to John 13 in verse 1, I'm just going to pick out one floor joist, a big one, a main girder through Jesus' room. And that was love. And that principle of love, now you're saying with me, love can be somewhat of an abstract thing, really. But if I've got it as the floor joist, then I get into these situations that are a little difficult, and Johnny isn't so much fun to love. I go back down to the floor. And I love him. And how long do I love him? Everybody? What's it say? Verse 1. I love him. Forever. Is that what you said? It says, Jesus loved them unto the end of the journey. If we get into our classroom this next year and we don't have floor joists like that, solid to stand on, we're going to be pitching and tossing, and our room's going to start getting a little bent out of shape. Floor joists is so important. I'm not a carpenter, but it's where you got to get started. And I could just go on here. You want a quick list? I need joy. I need submission down there in the floor joists. I need turning the other cheek. I need preferring others above them myself. I need to observe the law of sowing and reaping. I need respect in this classroom. Dot, dot, dot. The Bible. We can put that down there. That's where our principles come from. Number two, I'd like for you to choose a word on this wall. Anyone? And by the way, as we use up the words, you know, process of elimination narrows things down, but I'm going very far. Think about perspective drawing, and you will get the answer. Perspective drawing. You hit it. I did my perspective drawing rather quickly, and I don't know that all my lines converge at a nice, neat vanishing point, but crosshairs. What do you want? What do you want this coming school term? You're going to have a restful classroom if you take some time before you get there to answer that question. What am I talking about? It had been a restless lunchtime. Okay, sisters, you're off this time. It's boys this time. Did you ever hear of boys bragging? I'll tell one of myself before I go to the story in my classroom. Whenever I was going to school, I was a school teacher's son, and I went to school with a lot of farming boys. And there's one thing that boys can brag about, and it's tractors. Did you ever hear of such a thing? And there were, you know, the various brands of tractors. The sad thing was that I did, well, first of all, the happy thing was that I did grow up on a farm. And my grandfather was a farmer. My father was a teacher. And so there were tractors on our farm. The problem was, the sad thing was that the biggest tractor was a Deutz. Now, that wasn't so very popular in any tractor discussions whenever I went to school. Yeah, Deutz. And the second biggest tractor was down to Minneapolis Moline, and that didn't hold much water. But the third one down was an old John Deere Putt-Putt A. And did I ever grab up on that? And I can still remember one day on the bus telling how that old durable John Deere putt-putt, because John Deere's were, you know, they were good, and rather popular. I said, my grandfather even turned the front wheels. It was a tricycle tractor. He even turned the front wheels on the side and pushed brush with it. That was a, you know, powerful thing to say today. Rather trite. Back to this restless lunchtime. Boys bragging. They were comparing. They were ranking. They were pushing down. They were defending. This is in my classroom now. Students under me. And we were soon going to do a little mini field trip to a place in our local community where they were building a new freestall barn. And they were going to be setting rafters that day. And so we were just going to take a little break from our studies and all go over there as a school and watch them do this. And so now you know what the boys were bragging about. They were bragging about heights. Okay? And, no problem. Yeah, I don't mind just walking up here. You? What's wrong with you? That was the whole feeling and sentiment. Now, I will let you in here. I do not like heights as a teacher. But I'm sitting here through this restless lunchtime just watching this tug and pull and snide remarks and just kind of like, you don't. And some of the students were trying to honestly confess what I try to honestly confess and live. I just don't enjoy it. I just keep me down here on the ground. What am I to do? And as I sat through that lunchtime, I had to realize I want these young men to grow up to be strongly gentle. Young men, I want you to be tough, but I want you to be gentle. I want you to be kind. What's the use of growing older if we don't grow kinder? And that is what brought me up to my feet. And I said, class, we're just going to talk for a little while. I'm not going to go on with that talk because our time's going here. I'm just saying that in that moment, I as a teacher needed to say, we're training men for the church to pass on kingdom values, to pass on truth. What do I want? That's what matters most. What was Jesus' expectation? Verse 14, if I then, your Lord and Master, have washed your feet, I want to get a lesson taught today. Ye ought also to wash one another's feet. Jesus had it clear in his mind, just as clear as the crosshairs in a scope. And he hit the target. Did he? He sure did. Now the right wall is going to be a little hard for you to start deciding on these walls. So I'm just going ahead and put this one up. In your classroom, for there to be rest, you're going to need some structure. Do put that on the wall, not on the chalkboard. The way in which things are arranged, we simply call it schedule, a regimen. And I'm sure there's many workshops that you're attending through this week that are working on this in a practical way. We could simply use the word order. Let all things be done decently in an order. I see that in verse 2 where it says, and supper being ended. And verse 4, he riseth from that supper, laid aside his garments, took a towel, girded himself. I think the students watched a teacher who had things planned and knew what to do next. Possibly our best test on the restfulness in our classroom is to go out to recess. Recesses are such a beautiful time, but they need some structuring and some order to them so that they're restful. One time I went and just visited the local public school in our area because I had a neighbor that was teaching there, and I just wanted to get a little wind in there. And there were some things that I saw in the classroom that weren't so restful, but when we got to gym class, that was a beauty to behold. Now, they do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible. Those children, I think they were third and fourth graders, filed into that huge gym, and they all just automatically went to a square. They had a jump rope, and each one started to jump rope. And they were getting ready for some event, I think, when their parents would come in and watch. But that whole gym floor was just one rhythmic tap, 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 tap of lots of children, very orderly. And when there was one little chap that was getting just a little bit out of order, the gym teacher came over and helped him to get back into order. Ah, order is so beautiful. Rhythmic, restful activity. I don't know about you teachers, but there's something about a rope that begs for tension. I go out for tug-of-war games. I like tug-of-war and have the students, you know, do a pool. But before you know it, they're a hold of that rope, just dragging each other all over the grass. Has that ever happened? Maybe that's just peculiar to the children that I teach. And they're tugging and pulling. Let go of the rope. And to get that accomplished, we need to get practical as teachers. So number four, the chalkboard is going to be procedures. And that is an application of the structure. The structure is the whole wall. But I need to get more specific, and I use the chalkboard because sometimes I need to write them up on a chalkboard or a poster board and get decided, this is specifically, here's my word for procedures, this is specifically the way we're going to do it in our classroom. He laid aside, he took, he girded, he poured, he washed, he wiped. If we do not choose a way for our students to do things, routines, they're going to choose however they choose. Okay, so I as a teacher need to be ahead of that. And that's, you can choose however you want to choose when you're living by yourself, but we're training into our children concepts of living in the church and submitting and working together with the brotherhood and submitting to Almighty God. Get some procedures. Procedures of how we clean, how we're going to line up, notebook management, songbook distribution, and on and on. Now, there is a day coming whenever your students are not going to like this right-hand wall over here. And they are going to run away from it. What is the wall on the left? Now you can participate again. You said it. Do you like to discipline as a teacher? I don't. Thankfully, I have someone I can blame it on. And that is my father. He did not like the discipline aspect of teaching. He liked to motivate. He liked to teach. That's me. But do I want rest in my classroom? Just as strong and clear as this wall, I need this wall over here. I need it. Because the Lord loveth whom he chasteneth. So if I truly love my children, I need the wall of consequences. One day his human nature is going to rebel and he's going to run away from the order. And then we need a wall that he runs into. Consequences. Law of sowing and reaping. So we provide some rebuke and some correction and discipline. But this discipline is infused with mercy and truth. A beautiful theme in the scripture. Where the teacher remembers that he, yesterday's lesson on malleability, is in the same school of being disciplined. Now no chastening for the present seemeth to be joyous but grievous. I would note here in this story that Jesus did not pamper Peter. You know, Jesus could have said, here on the last day of class, Peter's still at it. And some of you have had Peters in your classroom, and even on the last day of school, Peter riseth up. And Jesus could have said, let's not spoil the last day of school. Let's just let Peter be Peter. Jesus took Peter in hand and said, Peter, you want to be a part? You want to be in this classroom? One day we were out having recess, and there was a student that I heard going past, and he gave this dare. We were having a freeze tag game, as I recall. You think you're tough, but you're not going to catch me. Oh, wasn't that a barbed one? I said, you can go inside. And what I communicated to him at that moment was, I want you to be a part, but not with that attitude. You follow what I'm saying? That's the consequences. Went in, sat down with him by himself, and there he melted. We need to understand that we do our children a misfavor. We are not walking in the way of righteousness if we pamper their flesh. We need the wall of consequence. But what are the windows? They are a consequence. Affirmation. Windows open. Sometimes we get the misconception that the law of sowing and reaping is only negative. Take this with you. The law of sowing and reaping is equally positive. A consequence of choosing right, of putting righteousness to work, is a window of affirmation. And I would come back here to Peter again. Peter, do you want to be a part of this classroom? Peter, do you want to follow me? That was a consequence of that wall. But notice the word of affirmation. He needed a rebuke, but in verse 10, did you notice these words? You're clean. Do you hear it? Jesus was still saying, Peter, I want you as my student. I've told other teachers, and I've tried to work on it myself. Every time you work discipline, walk acceptance right along with it. Be firm, be clear, let the discipline come into that child's life, but let them know you're going to love them to the end. And that is a word of affirmation we need to more often as teachers say, thank you, I appreciate what you did. Say it sincerely. Don't just, would you like a drink? You can do this. Put some affirmation in. They are windows that open up to our children's lives. Now, one of the things that is needed in a classroom is a clock. What is the clock? Anyone? Certitude. Had a co-teacher that said, consistency is everything. And as much as that goes kind of strong in and hits, I needed it. Am I one time this way today and the next time this way? If I want a restful classroom, there needs to be certitude where the students know what to expect. Can we as teachers avoid swings and extremes? Can we instill into our students a constancy in life, a faithfulness, a regular, like the tick of a clock? In the walls of this whole classroom, there is one thing that is very, very, very important in a room. And that is a door. And what is the door? A door of, it rhymes, a door of rapport. A door of rapport. If you do not have any, you're going to have students climbing the walls, wanting to get out of your room. What is a rapport? It's that friendly welcome where we say good morning and we mean it, and we say goodbye and we mean it. We are welcoming and we seek to build a relationship with that student. We draw near. We get to know. We want to be with them. This door may seem like a hole in your order plan, in the structure, in the consequences, and the floor of principle, but it is not. Now, in a sense, it is a small part of the classroom, but it is a very integral part of the classroom. Of course it is. Suppose I told you right now at this moment that as of this day, you are locked into this room forevermore. You're gonna want to get out. That's a prison cell. Our classrooms may not be prison cells. How can we make them restful? Have some rapport in your classroom. Get to know your students. Then we prepare them to go out through the door into a world of chaos and confusion, but there is a relationship that they'll never, ever forget. A teacher that loves them, a teacher that trusts them, a teacher that wants to do. But what are you going to do with Peter's? What are you going to do with Peter's that climb the wall anyway? Even though you've got a door and you've been working on the door of a relationship with Peter. But he still goes up that wall and you get him pulled back down and then he goes up the other wall. And then he goes around in circles in the middle of the room. How do you get a relationship with them? Some aren't so easy. But God's called them. And I would give this little tip in connection with rapport. Take time to get with Peter out of the scene of everybody else. I guess I'm a very strong believer that when you're working with a troubled student, don't do it in front of everybody else, because he's usually going to pull some colleagues in with it, and he's going to get a little gang going. Just say, down the hall. And then I usually find what works for me is that that also gives me time to pray. Because once he's parked down the hall, sitting in a little closet or room somewhere, it's giving him time to think. But most importantly, it's giving me time. And sometimes I've gone down the hall and I'm not ready yet. So I go off into the office. I lean up against the wall and I pray there. And I come back out in the hall and I'm still not ready sometimes. Teachers, we need to take time for some of these troubled students before we get there. I had a student that was troubled, wrestled up through school, didn't get his work done on time, and had emotional struggles as well. And so one day, things just kept piling up, and he wasn't getting his memory work said. Particularly, he wasn't getting the Children's Hour memorized. And I don't know if you know the Children's Hour or not. It's a rather long poem, and I realized it was going to be hard for him. But one day, I just had him in at recess, and I just leveled the thing. I talked to him straight, because there was other lessons that weren't done. His attitudes were poor, and he just gave me a stone wall. How can I get through? Finally, I said, let's just go as far as you can go down through the Children's Hour, and then we'll just recite the rest of it together, and we're going to call that assignment finished. I realize that with my truth and my firmness, he's going to need some mercy in the middle of this. Partway down through that Children's Hour, where the girls have come in on the dad, and the dad's in the chair. I don't know if you know the poem or not. And their arms about him entwine. I'm just going to give that phrase. The Spirit said, Mervyn, you got your answer right there. God gifted me with a tremendous thing. I got to the end of the poem, and this boy has two brothers that are mentally handicapped growing up, and he's the oldest boy. And I thought, you know what? I need to talk to him about those arms. Because the previous Sunday, despite all this boy's struggles, that boy loves his little brothers. I could know it. He was sometimes embarrassed about them, but I saw him walking out the hall with the two little brothers in his hands. And that's something not all of us have done. Is that right? Have two handicapped, mentally handicapped brothers? Have you walked that road? I haven't. But he did. And I said, Nevin, this poem reminds me about your brothers. And don't those little arms kind of entwine about you sometimes? He just softened, just melted. All the stoniness just went out. He started talking to me. He started conversing with me. A door of rapport. He graduated this last year. And on the last day of school, I called him forward for his report card up in front, and he came up and he gave me a smile. It was a smile of gold. We have two words left, am I right? I'm a little lost here, and it's time to finish. There's a little bit of trim around. See the trim? I want this to be small, but it's important. Teachers, you need to use a little tact. Certainly makes the room neater and pleasant. It's found all over the room. When you speak the truth, don't forget to be tactful. We as teachers can sometimes spoil the message that we want to convey just simply because we're just kind of letting the walls come down to the edge of the floor, and it's not beautiful. Let's be tactful. Now, this is small. I don't think we should put tact as the floor. I don't think we should put tact as the walls. But let's just trim a little bit. What I do thou knowest not now, but thou shalt know hereafter. Those are the words in there. Isn't that tactful, how Jesus weaved that in there and went on with the lesson? We had been outside, and we saw the neighboring class walking around with their ball bats up in the air like this, and it had them balanced. This was my co-teacher's classroom, and we came back in, and I, as a teacher, kind of enjoy that sort of a thing, you know, just, you know, playing around a little bit. So I started doing it in our classroom. I got a yardstick and I went around there. I said, boys, you know, can you do this too? And boys started grabbing up window sticks and various sticks, and they were going around like this. And every while I started watching, this is in the classroom, and this was not outside. Every while I was starting to watch my nice size, about my size, even maybe just a little bigger, 9th, 10th grade boy, and he was running with one that had a nice weight up on the top, which actually works best. if you have some weight up there on the top. He was going around with this thing, and I started seeing the clock up on the wall. And I thought, that clock, I think, is in danger. And I just said to him, commented to him, I said, now watch the clock up there a little bit. And what do you know, just seconds after I made the comment, well, bam, it hit the clock. Clock came tumbling down the floor. Pieces flew. As I recall, there was one that even went up on the windowsill, broke the clock. In that moment, teachers, it was not a time for me to go in on that student. It was not. It was an accident. He was in pure fun. I was the one that initiated the little inside the room going around with ball bats. Tact. Guess what? It's still on the wall in my classroom because it only broke the face off, got rid of the glare, the thing we couldn't see very well anyway. Now it's just this dull clock. Actually looks sort of antique. What's the last word, everybody? And it's in the ceiling. Everybody. Why is it up there? We look up to authority. And we are, keep going, under authority. And there's a whole week going on that, so I'm not going to tread on that. The room is built. Is there anything else needed? You. God bless you.